No, I won't kill you. Maybe you thought you were protecting yourself when you attacked the outpost. No, I won't kill him. Do you hear? You'll have to get your entertainment someplace else.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the TOS bridge,
this is Tyler Orton having yet another mint julep.
And we're here this week to rank Star Trek's early seasons. How has it taken us this long to get to it? I have no idea, but we're going to do it, damn it.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun series. We'll do this once a month. We'll start tonight with the original series and the animated series, and then we'll go from there. We'll do TNG as a whole, then we'll jump over the next month to Deep Space Nine, and so on and so on. This will take us, I think, well into the warmer months, and Cam, hopefully you and I will be double-dose vaccinated by the time we wrap this up.
What are we going to do when we get to ranking the Renegades episodes?
I will be enjoying my vaccination, and you can find a guest host for that one.
I'm sure I can find a star of Star Trek Renegades to fill in for you.
Correct. For those that may not be intimately familiar with our entire back catalog, but we did the Star Trek fan films episode years ago, and we did touch on Star Trek Renegades, which we kind of found mostly unwatchable, that particular fan enterprise, no pun intended.
That was one of the more challenging things, I think, for us to sit and rewatch. You and I have rewatched episodes like, you know, the famous ones everyone makes fun of, Spock's Brain, Threshold, fill in the blank on whatever episode pops into your head. But that sitting through Renegades for like 90 minutes was, it was a test.
It was really the script more than anything else. Like, I thought the production values for a fan film, I thought they were pretty good. But yeah, the script was just nothing but exposition dump after exposition dump. Like, it was just brutal.
Yeah, I mean, it did give us Chekhov's, what, niece's or a granddaughter's roommate, which was a great running joke.
For those who haven't seen Star Trek Renegades, every time this character enters the room, Chekhov's granddaughter says, "This is my roommate at Starfleet Academy." I'm like, I know, you've told us this about 14 times so far.
It's like, have you ever seen a bad movie that's actually a very simple plot where they just keep explaining it and explaining it over and over again because they're so scared the audience won't be able to keep track of this totally, you know, convoluted and confusing story they're trying to tell? That's what this felt like.
Yeah, what would be kind of that quintessential movie, though? Cam, you may have seen it on my Letterboxd recently. I rewatched Miami Connection, which is one of those so bad it's good kind of movies. But that was one of them where it was just kind of like, they're really driving home drug deals. I was like, I got with the plot of the movie by about 5 minutes in.
Yeah, they do that actually with Men in Black International, which I rewatched today for Spyhard's podcast. It's just like, how many times can characters explain a plot that should not be complicated?
I appreciate that you can plug your other show. Everyone, if you're not listening to Spyhards yet, well, go find it on whatever podcast provider you're using right now.
I like that we plugged Renegades first, though.
I'm doing it. Well, Cam, we are ranking in terms of quality, right?
That's right. So let's dive into the original Star Trek when we're talking about maybe not a lot of money, but big production values. That's Star Trek in a nutshell, although I guess it had a decent budget at the time. But nonetheless, compared to Star Trek Discovery, relatively small. So let's dive into early Star Trek.
Yeah, I think the idea, we're going to combine the animated series with the original series. We'll treat it as like one big entity, you know, five different seasons. And I think you and I, we want to come to a consensus as opposed to one of us unilaterally picking who's number four, who's number five, or what have you. I think we can kind of reach a consensus here. Do we want to start? Can I throw this out there, Cam? is it okay for me to suggest that maybe number five would be the animated series season two?
I think that's very fair, and I'm glad we're starting at the, you know, quote-unquote worst, although I feel like we don't have a true, you know, we don't have a season one TNG season here, but I think actually the number one and two will be a really interesting discussion, whereas I think people probably have an idea maybe of what could fill out, you know, the bottom half. So I think that's a good place to start. Now, here's the question with TAS season two. I agree with you. It probably belongs in last place, but is it just because it's shorter than season one? Because I don't know that there's a dip in quality.
I think that's a really big part of it. I have, you know, episodes in there that I like. I really like the Practical Joker. I like the Counterclock incident. Those are two highlights. I just wonder if they had, you know, instead of six episodes, they had a full, you know, like, what was it? 16 episodes, I think, in season one. I think you could have gotten just as a consistent, you know, output moving forward with that one as well.
Yeah, I like Pirates of Orion as well for a more interesting look at the Orions that we didn't get really on any other series for a long time. Yeah, like that's one thing I found very difficult with TAS, just in general. When I broke them down, I just, for my own way of organizing it in my head, I wrote a list for each season where I had four categories. They were hell yeah, yeah, nah, and God no. Basically episodes, you know, if they're hell yeah, they're like, I want to watch that episode right this moment. When you get to the God no, it's like, I never want to see that episode again in my life. And the middle ones are kind of like a, yeah, I'll watch that, or a nah, eh, whatever, who cares. And when it came to like this season of season two of TAS, it's kind of like they all just kind of fell under a yeah, sure. Like there was nothing that jumped out to me as a nah, or God, that's a terrible episode. They all just kind of fall into that, sure, why not? I only really put Counterclock Incident in the hell yeah, because it is very much in a TAS scale at this point. We're not looking at it in comparison to, say, Best of Both Worlds. We're looking at it more as, what does that episode give me? The others don't. It's so much fun fan service. The Robert April stuff, I really love it for that. But in terms of an overall quality, they all kind of fall into that, yeah, one thumb up sort of season.
I get you. And I think Star Trek sometimes has that issue with consistency. And, you know, a lot of okay episodes with a lot of touches of brilliance in between. But I think more often than not, at least the character moments were hitting, you know, home runs oftentimes. Why don't we jump over to the next one? Cam, what would you make the argument for maybe the fourth best of the seasons that we are ranking here?
I think I have to say, I mean, are we looking at consistency or are we looking at the highs, right? That's the big question, because I think a lot of people are going to dog on season three original series, which I think is totally fair. But when I look at TAS season one, I kind of fall into the same camp as I did for season two, where, again, like the list of, yeah, is huge. It's almost every episode of the season. And the only episodes that I'm really super excited about are Yesteryear, and then I put More Tribbles, More Troubles, and The Time Trap, which are all three really good episodes.
Those are the exact same three that I put on my list that I have in front of me as well. So I feel you there.
Yeah. And so it's like, do we make the argument that a show that's kind of running down the middle of the road for an entire season without, I had one no, which was The Jihad, which I think is a pretty weak episode, but it didn't fall into the God no category. So it's kind of like, do we reward this season over a TAS season three because it's consistent across the board, or is its kind of relative straight line consistency not that interesting to kind of talk about or to rank it highly?
Well, let me pose this question to you. If you are on a desert island and you can only take with you season one of the animated or season three of the original, like I'm pushing for one over the other, and I'll just be honest, you have more quantity with regards to season three, even though you do have quite a few more lows than I think you could argue with regards to season one of the animated series.
It's true, but some of those lows are a lot more fun too. Like The Jihad's not that fun, but
right.
Season three offers some genuine fun. So that's, I mean, I did put TES season one at my number four slot just because I like it, but if I, you're right, if I'm stranded on a desert island, it's not a season of Star Trek that I'm going to be super, super excited to revisit again and again, whereas TOS Season 3, despite all of its problems, offers me more value.
Cam, I'm not going to fight you on this. I feel the same way. Like, I would rank the animated series, you know, number 4 for Season 1. So I think we can agree. You know, Season 2 animated, number 5. Season 1 animated, number 4. Is it kind of, we can just jump into it. Would we both agree that Season 3 of the original series would be ranked number 3 as well?
Yeah, I think that's a fairly safe case to make, yeah.
That's not to say there aren't a lot of highlights in this season. There's a lot of really good stuff. You know, even something like Spectre of the Gun, it's kind of silly, but it's also fun. You know, but you've got like solid episodes though, like Tholian Web, that is just classic. And I think it's classic for a reason too.
Yeah. Tholian Web is a great episode that I think contributes a lot to Star Trek mythology. And that's the thing when I'm looking at these seasons too, is how much did they contribute to the overall stories and the, you know, the various strands of, you know, threads that have gone forward into the future of the franchise. TAS, not that much. There's bits and pieces for sure. Yesteryear is something that gets touched on again and again, but season 3, for all of its weaknesses, still does contribute to the larger canon in a big way. And I mean, I have other episodes on my, you know, hell yeah category. I have Enterprise Incident, you know, where Kirk goes undercover. I also had Spectre of the Gun, Day of the Dove, which is one of my favorite Klingon episodes. And All Our Yesterdays, which is another one that no one really brings up that episode very often, but it's the penultimate episode of Star Trek, the original series. And I think it would have made a fantastic finale. It's a really great episode that maybe just because of the place it falls in season 3, people had given up at that point in their, you know, even nowadays when they do their watches, by the time they get to the end of season 3, they're just throwing up their hands, but it's a pretty great episode.
Do you think that they just had to spend too much time on the special effects budget for Turnabout Intruder and the episode just wasn't ready for it to go ahead of All Our Yesterdays?
Possibly.
They pick one over the other, like, for your finale? Because they're only a week apart. You could have probably made the push to get it in ahead, right?
Oh, I would think so. Okay, is there an argument you could make? Like, go back to 1968 or whatever it was. And let's make the argument as a studio exec in the room why Turnabout Intruder should be the finale. Like, what would be the logic in this?
I will, instead of 1968, I'm going to go to 1969 when they would have been making this decision. But I would have said, okay, you're doing a high concept episode. It is very, very, you know, Kirk focused. Does it give like some finality to the series? No, not really. I just wonder if maybe the execs and the creatives both were just kind of, it felt like they were more working on the assembly line as opposed to working inside of an art studio at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure a lot of thinking was, whatever, that's the last one we shot, that's the last one that's going out. Because it's tough to make the argument because so much of Star Trek is about the triumvirate, and they play a huge role in the penultimate episode, All Our Yesterdays. Like, it's about the three of them all stranded in various points in time. And it's also kind of a Spock-heavy episode, and they were always willing to and excited about opening a season with Spock stories, with the mock time and Spock's brain. So why not go out with a very strong Spock episode? Shoulder shrug emoji, who knows?
Yeah. The other thing I don't mind highlighting, there's a lot of silliness throughout the season. Like, I know Spock's brain is like, that's the worst episode of, you know, the original series. This episode is like iconic. There's like Wonder Years homages to it. It's also like kind of dumb fun. Like, it's not a hard one to watch. It's stupid, but it's a lot of campy fun in that one. That's why I don't mind something like Spock's brain. Whom Gods Destroy, that, come on, that is a Shatner performance for the ages right there. Like, I love just seeing kind of all those other elements of like kind of the aliens down on the planet. I think that's a fun one as well, despite the campiness that we're getting with Shatner as, you know, somebody who has his body's been taken over by like another life at that point.
Well, also, speaking of camp that I can enjoy, and believe me, I come down on the positive with Spock's brain as well, because when you have the brain in brain, what is brain? Or the scene where they're doing brain surgery on Spock, and he's like, yep, a little higher. You know, stuff like that is amazing. But, you know, episodes like And the Children Shall Lead, for example, or there's a few. Savage Curtain with Abraham Lincoln in Space. Like, it's tough to make the argument these are hallmarks of science fiction that we need to cherish until our dying day. But those are episodes I have a heck of a lot of fun watching. Like, they are so goofy and campy, and it's a type of camp that is enjoyable to me. The only episode I put for season three that I fight to get through whenever I do my rewatches of TOS is The Empath, which I find just a grueling sit to get through.
Oh, I can totally believe that. Well, what do you make of, like, where does The Way to Eden fall in that spectrum for you, though? Does it fall into the campy fun, or does it verge a little more towards, oh, this might be a little grueling to sit through a little bit more of this?
So it fell into my no category, and, like, the no's, there's some there that are a little, maybe a little more of a sit, I guess. You know, Plato's Stepchildren's a bit of a sit. Turnabout Intruder's a bit of a sit in places. But they also don't enrage me to watch. Way to Eden is one that I think when we think about that episode, we think of the really crazy musical numbers and some of the weird stuff like that that does make it pretty fun and iconic in a lot of ways. I mean, there's a reason when we go to the Star Trek con, you know, when the world is still turning, you see people dressed up as characters, you know, the space hippies. Like, it's really fun. But the episode itself kind of wears out its welcome. If this had been I can't say animated series because I don't think it's as fun animated. I think if it's like a, you know, like either a Short Trek or a 22-minute long sitcom-length Star Trek episode, I would have a little more fun with it.
I'd love to see the updated Short Trek sequel to this one.
I would be down. Do you think they would do that?
I mean, look, they can do anything. They've done, like, follow-ups to, you know, Tribbles. And you know what? Every single week we watch Lower Decks. We both remarked, never thought we'd, you know, see that again. And Lower Decks kept doing it. I wonder, though, if maybe there's more of a chance that Lower Decks would do a sequel to that one versus one of the Short Treks.
That's a good call. I can actually see Short Treks doing that. I did find it interesting, though, going through these season three episodes, that how many of them are iconic? And you could argue that's because TOS was just aired in reruns for decades and decades until no one really knew what season and what episode it was. They all just kind of, you know, gained their own life. But, you know, when you just look at some of the ones we've named, it's really impressive. Even stuff like Cloudminders, for example, or Let That Be Your Last Battlefield, you know, with the half black, half white aliens. These are iconic images that have really stood the test of time.
Well, let me ask you this. Okay, so you already mentioned maybe your low point of the season, which is The Empath. I would, you know, Turnabout Intruder, it really does leave a sour taste in my mouth. That's the finale. What's your high point for season three of the original series?
I think my high point is probably going to be, I think I would probably make the argument for, I'm sort of jockeying between three in my head right now, between Enterprise Incident, Day of the Dove, and Tholian Web. I would probably say Day of the Dove is
really
probably my favorite. I think so. Okay. It's kind of emerged as a bit of a dark horse for me in recent years. It's obviously not one where the name gets brought up as much as, you know, the other ones I've named, but it is one of the really good early Klingon episodes, and it establishes Klingons in a way that doesn't have that sort of that whiff of them just kind of being a little bit of, you know, mustache twirling villains. Like, there's some really interesting Klingon characters earlier, but they're still played kind of as villains all the time. Whereas I feel like Day of the Dove, you get the complexity and you can see how they can seg from those Klingons into where we go with TNG forward.
You even have the introduction of, like, you know, the first Klingon woman, I think Mara was her name. And like, it adds to the mythology of the species. You can understand why they stuck around so much in kind of the collective memories of fans that they graduated into the movies and they became iconic throughout the spinoff series as well. Like, that's a totally solid one. For me, it was a little bit easier. I was debating between Tholian Web or Enterprise Incident. I think ultimately, just with the character stuff, both with Kirk and Spock, I got to give it to Enterprise Incident. Like, that's my high point of season three for me. And it's unfortunate. It comes very, very early in season three.
It does. But I mean, everything involving Spock and the Romulan commander is incredible. Like, I'm trying to think, is that maybe the last great Spock story? Because we get some going forward. All Our Yesterdays has a very strong Spock element. Cloudbinders does as well. But I think this might be the last true, you know, like the real high point. And then the other ones kind of fall a little bit further on the, you know, the totem pole of Spock stories.
I think it would be tough to make an argument about one of the subsequent episodes superseding Enterprise Incident as far as a premier Spock story.
Yeah. And I always thought it was a bummer they didn't bring back the Romulan commander, because I think she is a character that, in a different world, and had they introduced her maybe earlier, you know, season one or two, you would have seen that character again.
Well, maybe she can be featured in Strange New Worlds.
Fingers crossed.
She's a Romulan sub-lieutenant at that point.
Have you ever seen photos of that actress's daughter who played the same character in, I think it was Star Trek Continues?
Yeah, I've got autographed frames up in my apartment. It's decking my entire walls right now, Cam. Why do you ask?
Well, so I met the actress who played the Romulan commander. I got an autograph from her in Vegas.
Makes two of us.
Yeah, she asked me if I'd seen Star Trek Continues, to which I kind of was like, yeah, of course. I mean, I've seen a few episodes, but I haven't watched them all. And she asked me if I'd seen her daughter, and then I said, oh, yeah, of course. And she then had a photo, and it was actually eerie how bang on her daughter looked. Like, it was like a replica on that show. So, yeah, I still haven't watched that episode, and this was about 2 years ago or something that she mentioned this. But nonetheless, in terms of a photograph, pretty impressive.
Speaking of bang on replicas that could appear in Star Trek Strange New Worlds, here's something I've kind of been thinking in my head recently. What if, you know, we're introduced to this character named Sam. He's got like a mustache and all that. He's just walking around for like one or two seasons. We never learn Sam's last name until the last moment. He shaves off the mustache and he says, Sam Kirk. And it's going to be played by the same actor who will inevitably play one Lieutenant Kirk in this prequel series.
Oh my God.
Genius, huh?
That's incredible.
CBS. Oh my God. CBS, pay me those royalties when this plot twist inevitably happens.
I would love if they did that. I think that would actually be almost too clever. It's almost too genius.
Well, Cam, let's jump on over to, I guess this will be an interesting debate about whether or not we want season one or season two slotted next. And I guess by default, that would explain what would be the number one pick. But I think we can have like a debate about this. Do you have one? And we can talk it through. But is there one season that immediately pops to mind as number two versus number one?
So the conventional argument is generally that season two TOS is the greatest season of, you know, the original early Star Trek. I think in terms of like consistency, it is probably the best in terms of establishing, you know, your main three leads. They all are very, you know, they're ready to go in season two. And it feels like the triumvirate is working at full cylinder. But when I made my lists, I struggled because I felt like season one has more hallmark episodes, even though it maybe has more episodes also that are a little clunky, or, you know, even if I think they're, yeah, good enough, they still aren't as impressive as some of those more mid-tier or up, you know, a little above mid-tier episodes in TOS season two. Where do you come down?
For me, like, honestly, it's kind of, as I went through and made my list, it kind of felt easy to me once I looked at the, you know, highlight episodes and just stacked them against each other. I put season two at number two. Like, let's get into it. Like, there are one of my favorite episodes of Mock Time. You know, that kicks off the season. That's one of the greatest, you know, Spock episodes, period. We've got, like, things like Mirror Mirror, which really just informed a lot of the mythology of the franchise moving forward with, say, Deep Space Nine. And Yeah, to a certain degree, I guess, Discovery as well. But, you know, like even stuff like The Trouble with Tribbles, Cam, I mean, this is also iconic here. And yet, when I look at the season one list, I'm just like, oh, wow. There's even more episodes that, like, reach these heights versus season two. But what would your argument maybe be for, I don't know, if you want to push back against me with regards to me placing season two at that particular slot?
I guess the best arguments you could make are maybe that the, you know, the Hell Yeah episodes, they hit higher highs than the ones in season one. Like, when you're naming The Trouble with Tribbles, Mirror, Mirror, A Mock Time, I have also Doomsday Machine, Metamorphosis, Journey to Babel, Piece of the Action. I even put Ultimate Computer in there. That one's maybe not as heralded as I think it should be, but nonetheless, I really love that one. These are, like, incredible hours of television. And just to name those episodes, can you imagine if we had a season of Star Trek now where they had that collection of episodes in terms of quality in one season?
Yeah, Cam, it was called Star Trek Season 3 Discovery.
Or just all 10 episodes of Picard Season 1.
Boom, right there. No, I know these are... The reason I'm drawn to them is they're able to kind of tell these contained stories. You are familiar, you're pretty familiar with the characters at that point, and they really do feel comfortable in their skin playing these folks. And they're just, there's a reason why these ones have endured. And I push back against any fan who's just like, oh, I'm not really into the original series, it was never my thing, you know, too cheesy. I mean, I've just urged them to go watch these episodes and then tell me you were not incredibly entertained after you see them.
Exactly. And I mean, my chunk for, like, you know, my category for, like, the Yes episodes, it's almost the rest of the season. Like, there's very little wrong with season two. The only one that I put in the God no is the Omega Glory.
Okay. My low point, personally, I find Wolf in the Fold just really, like, difficult to watch, like unpleasant to watch. It kind of wrecks Scotty as a character to a certain degree. Like, he gets a head injury and he hates women. I'm just like, what? Like, that's my low point of season two, personally. What would be your high point, though? What I'm gonna make you pick one episode of season two.
One episode? Okay. You know, it's very hard for me to go against, say, The Trouble with Tribbles, for example, or Mock Time. But the one, if you're going to ask me just to revisit an episode of TOS Season 2, it's going to be Doomsday Machine. Is my go-to. Just like, that is like turning on, you know, there's those action movies you'll throw on, you know, something like, you know, The Rock or whatever, Die Hard, those standard just like classic action movies you'll throw on. You'll always have a good time no matter how many times you see them. That is what Doomsday Machine is for me in terms of the world of TOS. It is the episode where I'm going to tune in. I am just going to be sucked in immediately. And it has that, like, edgier seat cliffhanger that even though I've seen the episode like 5 or 6, 7 times now, I'm always in suspense that final moment when Kirk's going to ram that ship into the Doomsday Machine. And he's like, beam me out, Spock. Spock, beam me out. And, you know, sparks are flying. Scotty's trying to get the transporter going. And it's just like, this is incredible. Like, this is basically all of the elements of great action filmmaking on display in a 1960s show that didn't have the money to do what, you know, action film blockbusters have.
It's riveting entertainment. Could you just imagine if you were at home in, like, the 1960s watching this on your television screen at the time? Like, it would have been unlike anything else you had seen up until that point.
Yeah, because, you know, you think of a lot of 1960s TV, and to be fair, the 60s was actually pretty good for TV. You know, you had the Adam West Batman show. I've recently sort of discovered the Man from U.N.C.L.E. show, which is actually really entertaining, and I would put it up against something like a Star Trek in terms of some of the imagination and the ambition going for it. But, you know, so the 60s had that, but when you compare that, if you were a young person watching Star Trek in comparison to, say, some of the shows of the 50s you would have been seeing and stuff like that, it would just feel like such an evolution. Kind of like, I don't know, watching, you know, a show we love to cite all the time, Tyler, say like The Sopranos or Breaking Bad, you know, television shows like that. It's kind of like watching those going from, like, I don't know, like an hour-long 1980s drama, like, I don't know, Hunter? I don't know, like, name me a...
Hunter.
Why is that my go-to Hunter, for God's sakes?
I love it. I love it. I remember watching Hunter with my parents once because it was on really late. And I think they eventually said, like, yeah, the show's not really appropriate for you. I was like, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6. And even back then, I kind of agreed it wasn't that appropriate for me.
Sure, sure. But, you know, you think of all those hour-long dramas of that time. I don't think Hunter is the greatest example I could have named. I'm sure there's, you know, I'm sure you could watch L.A. Law, for example.
Saying Elsewhere,
sure. And that's nothing against those shows. They were very successful and acclaimed shows in their time.
Dynasty.
But just Dynasty. Yeah, exactly. Dallas. Just the evolution of those shows going into something like a Sopranos or Breaking Bad, it just feels like night and day. And I can't help but feel that people watching, you know, a Star Trek episode like Doomsday Machine, comparing that to like a 1950s episode of Rawhide, it was a little bit of a leap.
Bonanza.
Sure.
Yeah, for me, I'm debating between 3 episodes. It's either Mock Time, Mirror Mirror, or Journey to Babel. Push comes to shove, I think I've probably watched Journey to Babel more than any other TOS episode. Maybe Trouble with Tribbles, I've seen it more, but I ultimately think it's just such a great Spock story. It informs so much about him. It explains mm-hmm. so much about him. And it's just, it's fun. And like Kirk has a lot to do in this one as well.
Spock was a character, it was almost like they could do no wrong. Even Spock's brain, honestly, isn't an insult to the character of Spock, because it's not really even about Spock. It's more just about, you know, getting Spock back. Whenever they came to actually exploring Spock, he was a character you really couldn't go wrong with. He's kind of like that. Well, you know, some of those characters we've named, you know, Odo or Seven of Nine, even Quark. It's very difficult. Well, Quark, they actually did go wrong, spectacularly wrong once. But the other ones, Prophet and Lace people. The other characters, it's like if you went to them, it was very difficult to screw them up. They were so well defined.
Except for that Scotty episode.
Yeah, I put Wolf in the Fold in my no category alongside Cat's Paw and Assignment Earth. You gotta wonder, though, when you look at that season 2, you know, just those 3 I named there, some of the ones even in the plus column, is season 2 the weirdest, kind of craziest season of Star Trek?
In like wacky adventures that are just a little bit more out there. Like maybe you could argue that season 3 has a lot more mediocre episodes, but not necessarily go for like the memorable weirdness that you get in season 2.
Yeah. Like season 3, a lot of it's just cutting budgets and just kind of throwing things together. You know, here's another Roman episode, that sort of stuff. You know, Plato's Stepchildren. Let's just have the actors just dance around and be weird for an hour. But when you look at like season 2, they had more money. They had more creative energy. You know, Roddenberry and Gene Kuhn are still working on the show at this point. And you look at like the swings they were taking. Obviously, Tribbles is a, you know, one of the big classic episode, but a piece of the action. How do you go from opening your season with a Mock Time and then later in the season do a piece of the action? Like that is a real confidence swing right there.
I would love to hear what the writers were thinking as they're like, yeah, it's just another alien planet, you know?
Yeah, and like episodes like The Apple, which is my, that's in the pluses for me. That is my ultimate guilty pleasure TOS episode. I love The Apple, but it's nuts. Like, it's really like people were on something when they were putting that episode together.
I don't know about you, but I totally worship at the altar of granite snake statues. That's just me.
Who doesn't? No. We all should. We'd all be happier.
Well, Cam, so I think we now have to make our arguments justify we're putting season 1 at the number 1 slot here. This one, I go through my list of these episodes and I didn't do a list like you did, but like when I was picking up my favorites out of here, I'm like, wow, incredible episode. You've got like things ranging from like Balance of Terror to Galileo 7. You got Arena, Space Seed with the introduction of Khan. I know that there's more on your list that you absolutely adore here. This is okay. You do have this consistency with season 2. I think the series starts off pretty soft. And then by the time you're getting around to Where No Man Has Gone Before, Carbonite Maneuver, I think that's where they kind of figure things out. And from there, like it seems pretty solid for, you know, the duration of at least most of the season.
Yeah, Gene Kuhn jumps on board in like the first, like I think it's after 8 episodes or something like that. And that's when you really get that upswing. I mean, you have Naked Time in the first batch, and Corbinite Maneuver was the first one shot. So those ones were early triumphs that, you know, the airing order is a little weird with Corbinite, but when once like Kuhn's on board and you have, you know, the whole team working at full capacity, it's like a run of classic Star Trek sci-fi television. Just, it's crazy when you look at them on IMDb, like, wow, this episode aired after this one. How did you go from like classic to classic? Do you think we have the benefit now of watching these shows 50 plus years later? But do you think if you were watching this show in 1966, you would have been aware of the level of quality you were seeing?
That's tough to say because, okay, so how much access did people have to content versus what we have right now? Like, I tip of my finger, I have like, I don't know, 4 or 5, you know, streaming service subscriptions. I can watch anything. There's an abundance of it. If you're back, you know, in the 1960s, TV was really considered much, much lower than cinema was, you know? And so, yeah, you'd go out to the movies, you'd see a great movie. And then for TV, you turn on the news and maybe there'd be something else to watch to, you know, pass the time until you go to bed. I would hope you could recognize a genius, or at least recognize that there's really nothing like this on TV. How many of these like television series emerged out of the 1960s to really become like these franchises that still endure today?
Well, Gilligan's Island.
I stand corrected.
No, it's very true. I mean, you do see the odd one that they'll, you know, I referenced Man from U.N.C.L.E. earlier, and they did try to reboot that as a movie. But you're right. Like, Star Trek is the one that has had consistency across all the decades and has stayed a very strong, viable, creative outlet for not just, you know, filmmakers and TV producers who want to make the show, but also just for financially. It's always bringing in money. People are always supporting it. And when you have a run of episodes like this early on, it is kind of crazy to me that the show didn't really do that well ratings wise, especially in an era where you only had like 3 or 4 channels. That's kind of depressing, really. But, you know, you can understand why when it came to the 70s and syndication, people latched on to this. You almost wonder, like, was this show just a little too ahead of its time? Because I think if you were to drop this show now, people would pick up on it a lot quicker.
Yeah, and by drop it now, I think you're talking about the same scripts. I think there'd have to be some updates, but it's tough to say drop it now. I don't know. Like, it's really difficult to say what, you know, people are going to latch onto. I think so much of it just comes down to right timing. Like, I would hope that if Sopranos premiered right now, that it would not go unnoticed. But the thing is, when it premiered, it was at a time when there's nothing like it on TV and where there were fewer channels. It could have easily been lost if it was released, you know, just a year or two ago. So it's tough to say. And I wonder, we haven't noticed much talk about Star Trek Discovery or Star Trek Picard or even Star Trek Lower Decks, which we like. And I think part of it's the platform that it's on. It's on CBS All Access in the United States and Netflix the rest of the world, except for Canada, where it's on Crave. I wonder if just the platform that it had in which it jumped from broadcast television into syndication, and it remained playing in syndication consistently for another 20, 25 years, I think that played a giant part in the recognition and the success that it ultimately had, even after getting those ratings that just could not keep it on the air at the time.
Very true. And I mean, syndication is more important than maybe we're emphasizing too, in that right now, for example, the show Friends, there's this huge resurgence of Friends. And does that happen if that show's not in syndication and people are just watching it every day? Whereas now, with all the streaming networks, how many shows are people going to be in the mass quantities that we're watching syndicated television, shows like Friends or Star Trek, going to all be kind of watching the same, you know, streaming shows over and over again? Like, it doesn't seem like those numbers will ever be there the way they were with syndicated television shows back in the older days.
Well, it's weird. Like, if you look at the more popular shows on these streaming services, like, it's stuff like The Office and Friends, and these are all shows that aired, you know, a decade plus ago. But the thing is, like, The Office never really caught on. Like, syndication's not a thing anymore. It wasn't like The Office became a phenomenon because it was syndicated. It became a phenomenon because it was on streaming and people jumped onto it. It's just so hard. It's just such a fragmented viewing experience now, it's hard to point to what is going to become kind of that monocultural pop culture content that we all latch onto nowadays. What was the last, like, was it Game of Thrones? Is that the last one, Cam?
Mandalorian might be the last
one. Oh, yeah. You know, I think you can make the argument there, especially if you look at those Disney subscriber numbers. They just keep going through the roof. So, but...
Do you get the sense WandaVision is having that level of excitement?
I get the sense it's not.
Yeah, me neither. Yeah.
So, and I also suspect if we're going to have about 14, you know, Star Wars spinoffs, you know, airing simultaneously... Minus, you know, the Rangers, you know, FYI.
To be fair, I don't know what the Rangers was, though. Like, the Rangers could easily still exist in a different form. I don't even know what the original form was going to be.
Sure. Well, you know what I was
Carl Weathers, man. To. Carl Weathers. Carl Weathers is getting a spinoff. Yeah, I know you're referring to Gino Carano being booted deservedly out of the Star Wars franchise.
I ain't crying. But I just wonder how much, you know, Disney might just spread the love for the Mandalorian a little too thin by having all, like, you're gonna have like a Boba Fett plus another Mandalorian season. It's like, you know, there's what, like 7 or 8 or even like 10 of these things like in the works now.
Yeah, like, for example, my parents right now are watching The Mandalorian and really enjoyed season 1. They're in season 2 now. I would say the odds of them watching like spinoff number 6 is very, very unlikely.
Well, you're talking about the WandaVision spinoff number 6, right?
obviously. But yeah, like, I do think that is an element. Do you think, you know, with where Discovery is at now, Picard, you know, you're saying you don't hear people talking about it the way you do. Well, even WandaVision. I don't hear people talking about them even to the level of WandaVision. But had they aired on Netflix in North America, do you think that would have made the difference?
Yes, I do. I think it's a big platform deal. I really think it is. And the fact of the matter is, if you don't have a strong platform that people aren't really subscribing to, you're going to kind of sputter. Like that. And I don't know. Well, we can debate the quality. I just think like the platform is more important than anything else at this point in the game.
Yeah, I mean, quality is all relative, right? Like, we can come down where we think something is, but there's been a lot of very popular shows that, you know, either you or I were not a fan of.
I still don't get Stranger Things. I find that show so mediocre, and yet it is like a pop culture phenomenon. And I just kind of point to, you know, the platform that it's on.
Yeah, Walking Dead did not grab me at all. Like, that was the one where I was like, wow, a lot of people are really loving the show. I couldn't even make it really past the first season.
Well, don't worry, Cam. You only have, I think, like 14 more seasons to catch up on to find out what everyone's talking about, right?
I'm good.
So what might be...
Yeah, speaking of first seasons.
Yeah, what might be kind of the low point for you for season 1 of the original series?
Tyler, I just have one question. What of Lazarus?
Oh, God. I don't want to answer that question.
Yeah, the alternative factor is the low here, where it's an episode that when you watch it, it's like the Royale from season 2 of TNG? I think it's season 2.
Yeah, I think Riker's got the beard.
Yeah. That's an episode that makes almost no sense, and it ends with the characters being like, what was that all about? You know, well, some mysteries aren't meant to be answered. It's like, right, okay, they don't know either. That's what alternative factor is. It's like, I get it. It's near the end of season 1. When you look at the caliber of television they're cranking out week to week, there was bound to be one that just did not work whatsoever. And that is alternative factor.
Okay. The one that that is so uncomfortable for me to watch, though, is The Enemy Within. Like, that's a horrifying episode. So and especially when you consider the history of what was going on as well, like, that one's just brutal. What about what is your top episode from that season?
Oh my God.
You got to pick one. I'm going to hold
know,
you to
right?
that. Yeah.
I know, and that's what tells me that this is the best season, is that I'm looking right now at, like, a pile of episodes in my Hell Yeah. So many, I'm not even going to name them all, because it would just turn into me reciting episode titles for, like, 2 minutes. Because there's ones you look at, like, Balance of Terror and Corbomite Maneuver are immediately jumping out to me. But I don't know. Can you argue against City in the Edge of Forever? Like, that's the big question for me. I mean, if you ask me right now to sit down and watch one, I'm probably going to put on Corbomite Maneuver because that's the one that really gives me that spirit of Star Trek. But in terms of an hour of impeccably written, directed, acted television, I don't know that you can do better than City on the Edge of Forever.
Yeah, I this might be like the one that we agree on as our top pick. It's like, it is, I think you could make the argument, it is the best episode of TOS. It might not be your favorite. I can understand it, but I think you can unequivocally say that it is, you know, the best episode. And I don't know, there's others in there, you know, like Devil in the Dark. I think that's like a great one, but I can't really put it up against City on the Edge of Forever, can I?
No, and there's other great ones that maybe don't get the attention that they deserve, like Errand of Mercy or Taste of Armageddon. Again, great episodes, but again, you can't make the argument against City on the Edge of Forever. I mean, if you were, I mean, for me, Corbomite and Balance of Terror are the two that rival City on the Edge in terms of just pure watchability. Is there any other that jump out to you that you would maybe put in that same, maybe you would knock out Corbomite for something else, or either way?
I really like Galileo 7. Like, that's yep, a really great one. I don't, okay, maybe Space Seed isn't quite as high on my list as it would be on others. And that's why I might even like kind of knock that out and consider Arena, which is just, that is like a kind of a classic survival episode. It's just fun to have the crew watch Kirk from the view screen and he invents a cannon. Like, it's just, there's just so much classic iconic stuff going on. An episode that might otherwise, okay, it might come off as cheesy now, but it's great television, but it's no City on the Edge.
Well, like, when you're talking about iconic Star Trek moments that have just penetrated pop culture, you're going to have that moment where Spock does the salute in A Mock Time. And I think you're going to have Kirk versus the Gorn. Like, those might be the two, right?
Would you make the argument for the Troubles flooding out of the compartment and knocking Kirk over?
Good call, actually. Yeah. But if you're going to look at season one, it is going to be Kirk versus the Gorn, right?
Out of all the moments in season one, I think that has to be the most iconic. 100%. I really do.
Like, I know people love, and I do too, the alien face and Corbomite and stuff like that. That's on t-shirts everywhere. But I think that Gorn thing, the fact that they were making mainstream commercials where it's William Shatner sitting next to the Gorn on the couch, it's very well known. Very, very well known.
The one episode I say maybe has no right to be nearly as good as it is the Menagerie two-parter. Like, this is like kind of this chopped together episode from a failed pilot. You're still able to put it together to something it's absolutely riveting to watch Pike's journey and, you know, proto Spock and like kind of the early crew, including, you know, number one.
Well, I mean, we didn't really talk about The Cage because it falls outside of TOS in so many ways. You know, it's not aired till like 86 or something like that in syndication. But I mean, the material, the raw material of that episode is so important to the Menagerie. That's why it's so watchable. I mean, obviously you get great Spock and Kirk stuff and Burnt Pike. But just the Cage pilot itself is a pretty incredible hour of television, especially you and I talk so much about Star Trek pilots or just pilots in general of shows we're watching, you know, off the air. Most pilots are shaky. And I mean, the Cage may not be a great series launch, but it's a pretty great hour of television.
Oh, absolutely. Well, okay, so Cam, why don't we go through our list, and then we have a bit of a surprise for listeners at the end of this as well. But number five is the animated series season two. Number four, animated series season one. Number three, the original series season three. Number two, the original series season two. Number one, the original series season one. I think the lesson is Star Trek gets progressively worse as the years go on.
It's been diminishing returns since The Cage, and it's
pretty much, yeah. So yeah, folks, a couple weeks ago, my girlfriend, she started watching the original series. She says she's determined to watch all of Star Trek, which, hats off to her. We'll keep you updated on that journey. But I was able to ask her a couple questions, and I did not. Okay, so I thought, Cam, when I started recording, My phone was out. It was right there on the table. I hit the recording app when we were kind of halfway through this conversation. I thought it was very clear to her what I was doing. I'm just pointing it out. She has given me permission to put this audio clip of us. I don't think we said anything untoward that would get us into any real trouble. I will just point out, though, maybe we were maybe one or two glasses of wine into this conversation. So if we slip up with some facts or some descriptions, just forgive us a little bit. But Cam, why don't we roll that clip right now?
Rolling.
Scotty, he looks different.
Nope, Scotty is still the same actor. Wait until you get to the motion pictures where the actor looks quite different, but it is the same actor.
What? Why does he look different?
I don't know. But it's 100% the same actor in season three as seasons one and two.
I thought they switched him out because, like, this isn't the same.
Are you talking about the chief engineer?
Yeah.
Huh? No, it's the same actor, I swear.
What?
Yeah. A Canadian actor, James Doohan. He's not Scottish. But okay. He did serve in the Second World War, and so which meant that he was stationed in the UK. He was trained in the UK.
Yeah.
So, and did you realize though that he actually lost a finger in the Second World War, and they had to hide it throughout the filming of the original series? It was a different era.
I know. Yeah.
So, can I ask you?
Okay.
Who is your favorite character so far? Why do you like Spock?
He's logical.
He's logical.
And one of my favorite episodes, I would say, was the one where they hosted... Was it Diplomats?
Oh, are you talking about Journey to Babel with Sarek and Amanda? And Sarek and Amanda come to the ship in the shuttle, and there's kind of that assassination attempt. And Kirk has to fight the Andorian, who is actually... Not
and
an Andorian.
His dad was on the ship. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I like that one.
That is one of my favorite episodes.
Oh!
Rose, oh my gosh. Wow. Okay.
But yeah, I kind of like that one because it's like his dad comes and it's like, okay, do I help save my dad or do I help save the ship? For me, personally, my dad.
I get it.
But his logical mind for the crew and... the rest of the world, whatever. It's like, is it worth saving one life and whatever? But I like that one.
Yeah. What about the episode where Spock was swinging in a tree? Is that the Paradise Syndrome where he took like magic mushrooms?
Oh yeah. I like that one. That was hilarious.
Yeah.
I like that one.
So, okay. I'm digging that. Okay. I'll be honest with you. For the longest time, I thought I was a Spock guy.
Okay.
When I started... my rewatch a couple years ago of the original series all the way through, I realized I'm actually a Kirk guy. Does that put you off? Like, Shatner out of the equation, but Captain Kirk as a character.
As a character? Yeah, I like him.
Okay.
He's a good guy. Like, yeah. Yeah, I like Kirk. And I also like the relationship between Spock and Dr. McCoy.
Expand on McCoy's okay, because they are polar opposites.
Yeah. But they butt heads a lot, but they still like each other.
If you had to be one of those two characters, who do you identify with most? Spock or McCoy?
That's hard. McCoy.
Really? Okay. I always think of you as kind of the logical, like, not that you don't have emotions, but like I think of you as kind of the logical, more
Spock-like.
I like
Spock. I'm a Spock fan, but I'm probably more McCoy than Spock.
Do you like, mint juleps? Is that something that you would try? Much
is
like
that his thing?
McCoy?
Oh, does? Is that his?
Okay.
Are you recording me?
Yeah. This is only for Cam. It's only for Cam. Don't worry.
Okay, it ends
here. It ends here. No, I've got more questions for you. Don't worry. you mentioned to me on text though you've been missing Sulu in season two. What is it about Sulu? Is it the George Takei factor where like you know him as a personality and then you can look at him 50 years ago and be like, oh, that guy's got this magnetism? Or is it like kind of the character of Sulu? What's the appeal of Sulu to you, and why did you miss him in season two? No, I was just curious. Like, why was, like, Sulu a character?
Because I noticed him. He was there in the beginning.
Yeah.
And then he just disappeared. Like, oh my god, did they let him go for some reason? Like, how you told me that the first Yaomin character got raped and then she got fired. And, like, what did Sulu do? He's gone now, all of a sudden.
He wasn't sexually assaulted. He wasn't fired.
I'm sorry, Trinidad. I drew a blank. I'm sorry.
Don't worry. Yeah. No, it's just he went and did a movie with John Wayne. That's all. And then, okay. Are you about to start season three? Like you?
My last episode was the Native American episode.
Okay, interesting. What did you think about the depictions of Kirk, who I guess I just admitted was my favorite character in that one?
He did fall in love with a Native American who played a Native American.
Okay. Problematic, would you say?
A little bit. Yeah. It wasn't a bad episode. I mean, for its time.
Okay. Do you have to, okay, when you watch it, do you have to say to yourself, oh, for its time, a lot?
Yeah. For its time. Because it has been pretty diverse.
Well, okay, you would have just watched The Trouble with Tribbles. Remember
I showed you that image? And then I'm like, oh, okay, so what about that?
It's such an iconic episode. It might be the most iconic episode amongst, like, if I'm being honest. It's because you have all these cute little aliens all toppled on top of Kirk.
First of all, how wasn't there a policy of, like, no pets on board? Like, she could just buy a pet and bring it on board. I don't get it.
Well, they were on the space station initially, right?
Yeah, and that's where they just buy a pet and bring it on board.
I don't think that they knew that they would multiply beyond bunny multiplication.
Was there a pet policy?
Okay, beyond the pet policy. What did you think of The Trouble with Tribbles?
I liked it.
It's like a fun episode.
It's cute, yeah.
Would you believe me that there are not one, not two, but three sequels to that episode?
Really?
But all in different series.
Oh.
Yeah. The animated series, which you asked about, they do a sequel to that one. Star Trek Deep Space Nine, which takes place about 100 years after the original series, they do a sequel. And there's also a prequel in the what they call Short Treks, which this one debuted, I think, in 2018. And it's called The Trouble with Edward. And it explains why these tribbles multiply so much. So these are all fun episodes that I really
because
do need to show you.
Because he keeps
eating them. Exactly. Okay. This is a serious question. This was answered in an episode. What do you think tribbles taste like?
Ew. Chicken nuggets?
Not too far off. scallops. They taste like scallops.
No. Yeah. They're not sea animals. They're little chicken nuggets.
The other thing I wanted to ask you. Do you remember the episode City on the Edge of Forever?
I don't remember the names of episodes.
It was the one in which they jumped through the Guardian and they went back in time to 1930s New York City.
Were they gangsters?
No, that is a piece of the action. This is the one where Kirk and Spock were homeless and they had to go to the soup kitchen and Kirk fell in love.
Yeah, it was a time travel one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they had to stop her from getting hit by a car. Or
no, they had to ensure that she was hit by a car. And he
fell in love with her.
Yeah. What did you think of that episode? Because, I just want your honest opinions.
That's hard.
Be honest, though. I don't, you know.
Yeah, they did the right thing.
Okay. Did it touch you on, like, an emotional level, or was it mostly, like, or did it feel like any regular episode to you?
It felt all the same to me.
Did it? Okay. No, fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, so what's been, okay, you don't have to give me the episode title, but maybe describe the episode. What's kind of been, like, one of those standout episodes to you? Was it Journey to Babel, the one in which Sarek and Amanda came to meet their son Spock on the ship.
Yeah.
That's your favorite episode?
That stood out to me.
That, like, I'm being honest, that might be the episode I've watched more times than anyone else.
That, and I rewatched that Metamorphosis.
Metamorphosis? Yeah.
That was the first episode I saw, and then I rewatched it.
You didn't skip it?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I rewatched it again, and I enjoyed that one, too.
You liked my recommendation for you?
I liked it better the second time I watched it.
Was it because you kind of understood the characters a little more? Okay. Yeah. So, okay. I'll be honest with you. You're getting close to season 3.
Mm-hmm.
There are some very good episodes in there, but it is not considered to be as good as seasons 1 and 2. It might be more of a struggle.
Okay.
When you get to the episode Spock's Brain.
Oh, actually, I think I saw that one.
Oh, you know what? Okay, if you're already into the Kirk as the Native American.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that the one next?
What did you think
I think that was the last one I saw.
Brain. What is Brain?
Weird. That was weird. How was that logical that he was still surviving? Maybe I missed something because I was on my phone half the time.
I don't think you missed anything. I think it is often considered the worst episode of the original series.
Okay.
I think it's like hilarious. It is so messed up. It is weird. It's entertaining to me. But that's often considered one of the ones where you might wish to skip over.
You know what? The next one I think I watched was the one where he seduced a Romulan that looked like Spock.
What did you think about that?
That was weird.
Really? That is often considered like one of the best episodes of the series. It just did not work. I believe that's the Enterprise incident.
Yeah, I think that was the last episode that I saw. Okay. And no, I didn't enjoy that.
No?
One.
Okay. Wow. I like this kind of
I can't see Spock seducing anyone. And I did not buy that one. Like, I knew it was a ruse.
Okay.
But
well, okay. It was 1960s television. Okay, so you're powering through season 3. Are you willing to do the animated series?
Yep.
Okay. It'll take you like less than half the time to power through. So
wait, is it on Netflix?
Oh, they're all on Netflix.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Then, yeah.
Well, Rose, we'll have to catch up.
Cam, what was better, that clip or City on the Edge of Forever?
Well, I was so engrossed by that audio when you sent me that. I remember being like, wow, this is a few minutes. Am I really going to be entertained by this? And I was like, sucked in. It was like Serial podcast or something where I was like, where's the next episode? I need the next episode.
Well, you know, she is making her way through TNG now. So maybe on Valentine's, we'll have a couple glasses of wine. I'll see if I can convince her to do a follow-up for her thoughts on Star Trek The Next Generation.
Oh, that would be incredible. Yeah. And she is, we should say, barreling through. Like, I think she's putting a lot of diehard Star Trek fans to shame in terms of the speed in which she is journeying through Star Trek.
I started doing my rewatch of Deep Space Nine, you know, maybe, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks ago. I'm halfway through season 2. She's going to surpass me much sooner than I care to admit. And this is coming from a guy with a Star Trek podcast. So she really is putting me to shame at this point.
So what you're saying is she's going to guest when we do Ranking Renegades.
Oh, well, no. This is kind of my way of saying that I'm going to boot you as the host, and she will be replacing you moving forward.
Typical. I expected this.
Well, you know, after I played that clip, I'm getting, my phone is blowing up with text messages from listeners demanding that she replaces you. So, yeah. Thank you, Rose.
Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Tyler, what are we doing next week?
Cam, we are going to be examining Star Trek's obsession with Starfleet. More specifically, those that aren't really obsessed with Starfleet. There are a large number of characters that don't feel as if joining Starfleet is the be-all, end-all. We're going to talk about, you know, why Star Trek is so obsessed with this paramilitary organization and why some characters just don't really give a F.
I'm looking forward to this one because, you know, Tyler, yes, we are Starfleet. We are Starfleet.
Red Squad.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this. This is going to be fun. Okay, and you can also find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam. V is in Vink of an Eye, is how Chekhov would pronounce Wink of an Eye, Smith.
And you can find me at Reportin. That's REPORTON. N as in Netta Narcissus.
Okay. So until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.